Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C, this is Agriculture Today.
The Purdue University CME Group Ag Economy Barometer Index rose 8 points in July to a reading of 113, but that still leaves that index down 10 points compared to a year ago.
Dr. Jim Minter, director of the Center for Ag Profitability.
If you look at the index of current conditions and the index of future expectations, they were both up as well during the month of July, but both of those indices remain below their levels of July 2023. The Farm Financial Performance Index declined in July. It was down to a reading of 81, which was 4 points lower than the prior month, and also 6 points lower than a year ago. When we ask producers what their biggest concerns are for the upcoming year, they continue to point to the risk of high input cost, followed by the risk of low crop and livestock prices and rising interest rates.
This is Agriculture Today.
Almost all the corn is silking 88% nationally. That is equal to the five-year average, slightly behind last year's 90%.
Brad Rippey is a meteorologist with USDA as we break down crop conditions across the country.
Meanwhile, 46% of this corn crop has reached the dough stage by August 4th, well ahead of the five-year average of 38%, ahead of last year's 42%. As we look for the first time this year at corn reaching the dented stage, nationally 7%, five-year average is 5%. Last year we were also at 7%.
From corn to soybean crop development.
86% of the U.S. soybeans blooming, five-year average 84%. Last year a little quicker at 88%. As you move to the setting pod stage, 59% nationally, five-year average 56%. Last year at this time, 61%. We have two states appreciably behind, Minnesota and North Dakota, both 17 points behind their respective five-year averages. Minnesota, 48% setting pods. North Dakota, just 39%. But on the flip side, we've got progress into double digits ahead of the five-year average for setting pods in Illinois, Indiana, Missouri, Nebraska, and Ohio.
Now that's crop development. What about condition ratings?
Soybeans take back over the lead from corn, now 68% good to excellent, up a point from last week, 8% very poor to poor, no change from last week, but far better than the 2023 crop, which at this time in early August was rated just 54% good to excellent and 14% very poor to poor.
But if we're seeing any crops improve, it's not sorghum.
A week ago, sorghum nationally was rated 55% good to excellent. That is down to 47%. And a very poor to poor rating for sorghum, 13% a week ago, jumping to 18% on August 4th. States leading the way with that stress on the sorghum include Colorado and Texas, both at 25% very poor to poor. Not far behind is Kansas, coming in this week, 17% very poor to poor.
What about conditions for rice?
Rice condition, even with a slight decline, looking very, very good. A week ago, we saw 83% of the crop good to excellent. That's a high for the 21st century. 3-point drop this week to 80%. Meanwhile, we're steady at 3% very poor to poor. And that still outpaces last year by quite a bit, 71% good to excellent in 2023, early August, and 4% very poor to poor.
And expecting a big harvest there. And speaking of harvest,
winter wheat harvest, it looks like we've got 1 to 2 more weeks to look at this. 88% harvested on August 4th. If we reach 95% next week, we'll shut it down for the year. With that 88% harvested by the 4th of August, that is 2 points ahead of the five-year average of 86%, also ahead of last year's 85%. An increasing number of southern and central states have finished with harvest, including number one producer Kansas. And the only two states that have not reached the halfway mark on the winter wheat harvest by August 4th, Idaho, 26% harvested, 3 points behind the five-year average, and Washington State, 47% harvested, 2 points ahead of the five-year average.
And for cotton?
2 weeks ago, Texas, 40% good to excellent on the cotton, down to 40 a week ago, 32% this week. Meanwhile, very poor to poor ratings for cotton in Texas, jumping from 25% 2 weeks ago to 31% last week, now to 40%.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
Well, we've got to the end of the month of July, and we haven't seen any droughts show up. Or if there are concerns in some areas that are pretty wet, that hasn't come forth yet either.
That's Dan O'Brien, Kansas State Grain Marketing Economist.
The markets are paying attention to crop ratings, and we'll talk more about this a little bit later on, but that's led us to the point where these corn closed, on the last day of July, since that's good, we're going to use that as kind of our benchmark, closed on at below $4, $3.99 3/4. And you know, these even numbers are psychological barriers, i.e. reference prices. So $3.99, these corns is a, quote, big deal. And also on the 31st, we closed November soybeans closed at 10.22 and a half, and of course we're in Kansas. We've harvested our hard red winter wheat crop, but overall, generally, we're just so-so for prices. We're really, what people are looking at now is probably any old crop sales that they have. You do it. You do have new crop price bids available for wheat. We'll talk about that in a minute. But September contract, lead contract, 5.49 again, right around 5.50. You're getting at USDA reference prices for wheat. I think that is 550. So that's basically where we're at right now. And it is interesting that now that we're done with this harvest, looking to the next July's harvest, that July 25 contract closed at 5.86 1/4. So it, quote, is as it is. And, you know, diving a little bit deeper in the specifics of this, that the trend for corn futures basically has, in essence, late June, early July, we've moved below about 410, 415, and for that July contract, again, closed on middle of the week, you know, somewhere 380, 385, something like that. So we're down from that situation. And the trend, as we talked about, trends in crop conditions, you have percent good to excellent, about 67-68%, something like that. You know, really not showing any real problems yet. My only caveat to that would be in some extremely wet areas, Wisconsin, parts of northern Iowa, southern Minnesota, over to South Dakota, even some parts of Nebraska, at least as I look at the moisture maps. You know, if there's any damage to that, to yield, that'll come from too much moisture, slower development. Well, that's, I don't know that that's going to show up with these crop ratings that we've got. That's just my own concern. So it does leave room for some type of a lower yield than these record high yields that are projected right now.
And sorghum has been looking pretty good, but now starting to wither a bit.
For grain sorghum, we're sideways to a little bit lower. Again, we're about 58% good to excellent. Of course, more grain sorghum's grown in some of the tougher areas. Well, in the Western Corn Belt, where we've had, if we have had any situation that hasn't been as optimal, it's been there. So here you got corn in some areas of the U.S. coming into dough stage. You know, we're about 35% dough, and still, if we have up and down weather issues in August, that you can still see problems there. But corn as it is, generally, here we've had some major AgCon meetings of late, where AgCon has got together, talked about different issues that are relevant, and one overall theme, and at least on the grain market side, is that we're not valuing any, we don't have any risk premium in these markets.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
Now, I mentioned land, and that is going to be dependent on how that piece of land is titled.
We're talking about stepped-up bases. Anastasia Mayer is an ag economist with the University of Nebraska at Lincoln's Center for Ag Profitability.
So if it is a joint tenancy, then the spouse would inherit it at a 50% stepped up basis. Otherwise, it's going to be how that piece of ground is entitled. As the average age of farmer and operator increases, and a large portion of land is owned by either retired farmers or operators who farm that piece of ground that they own, I think we're going to be seeing a large transition of assets here in the future, as they either are looking at estate planning and transitioning, or they pass away.
We have stepped up bases. We have capital gains. And Mayor has an example.
I talked about a father, we called him Bob, and he bought land in the 1970s for $500 an acre. Very rarely can you ever find a piece of ground for $500 an acre, if ever. So let's say Bob made no improvements on the land, therefore no depreciation can be taken out on the land since land is a non-depreciable asset. If he went and put fences up, terraces up, buildings up, all of those could be depreciated, but land cannot be. If Bob was to sell the unimproved land for $7,000 an acre today, Bob would be subject to a capital gains tax of $6,500 an acre and taxed accordingly. Now, the tax rate is going to be dependent on how much income he makes and some other things. So I can't tell you exactly how much, but he is going to have that capital gains tax of $6,500 an acre at a certain tax break. However, if Bob doesn't sell the land and he wants to pass that piece of ground to the next generation, he could not sell it, hold on to it, and then the beneficiary would inherit the land at fair market value of $7,000 per acre on the day of his death. Then that basis is stepped up from $500, the original value that Bob paid for it, up to that $7,000 fair market value today. Now, if Bob's child or heirs decides to sell the land after inheriting it, they would be taxed on the sale amount above the $7,000 an acre. So if the, let's say we are in a low farm economy year and land values actually go down a little bit, or they're not selling at $7,000 an acre anymore. If they sold less than $7,000 an acre, they could claim a capital loss on their tax return if the property is sold in an arm's length transaction. So what I mean by that is you can't sell the land to your friend at a reduced rate. It has to be a fair market, like on an auction, or there's specific guidelines with that arm's length transactions, but it can't be sold to a son at a reduced rate or other related party at a severely reduced rate. In order to receive a more favorable long-term capital gains tax rate, the heir has to own that piece of land or other assets for more than 1 year. Otherwise, they're going to be taxed at a higher rate for the capital gains tax.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
The Ag Economy Barometer Index rose 8 points to 113. That was a surprise. I certainly wasn't expecting a rise in the barometer this month.
Talking about the July Purdue University CME Group Ag Economy Barometer, Dr. Jim Mentert.
That still leaves the index, though, down 10 points compared to a year ago, so it's not as positive as you might think at first glance. The bigger surprise, I guess, was both of the sub-indices, the Index of Current Conditions and the Index of Future Expectations, were up. The Current Condition Index up 10 points compared to last month. Future Expectations up 7 points compared to June. Both of them, though, are still lower than a year ago, especially the Current Condition Index. It's 21 points lower than a year ago. Future Expectations, I think, was down 5 points compared to a year ago.
Mentert is director of the Center for Commercial Ag at Purdue and Purdue ag economist Michael Langemeyer.
I was definitely surprised, particularly with the Index of Current Conditions. And when you look at corn and soybeans, for example, and you project net returns for corn and soybeans in 2024, I think this could be one of the worst years in terms of net returns since 2007. I mean, we had some pretty low net return years from 2014 to 2019, but it's gonna hang right with some of those low years from 2014 to 2019. And about 55% of the people surveyed are primarily corn and soybeans. And so, yes, I was surprised.
Now, Mentert says it's important to understand the questions asked or not asked.
So I think it's important to remember that although the Current Condition Index was up in July versus June, maybe the more relevant comparison is to a year ago, and it was 21 points below a year ago. So maybe that's a little better comparison when you look at it that way. And then I think you know, the other thing to think about, Michael, is the week we conducted the survey. It was the 15th through the 19th of July. That coincided with the Republican National Convention that took place in Milwaukee. And we've seen this in the past in 2016, following the 2016 election when Trump was elected. We saw a big jump in sentiment. In 2020, when Trump lost, we saw things move the opposite direction. What we didn't do this month, this is where we got caught a little bit flat-footed. We have in the past asked some policy-related questions to learn more about why people's sentiment might have changed other than economics. And some of those things that people focused on in the past were the change in the regulatory environment, change in taxation, even change in trade policy. We didn't ask those questions this month, so we can't delve into that. But when we looked at the results, I think both of us thought that the political environment might have had an influence on sentiment. We've got evidence in the past that things other than economic variables can influence sentiment. And I think this might be a case where that actually happened.
So what can we pull from the July barometer?
So when we ask people about their biggest concerns for the upcoming year, no big changes. The number one issue continues to be high input cost. Number two, though, is lower crop and livestock prices, or the risk of lower crop and livestock prices. That was chosen by 29% of the people in the survey as their top concern, or one of their top concerns. Higher input costs chosen by 34% of the people in the survey. Again, when you make the comparison this month to a year ago, you can kind of see the change in perspective. A year ago, only 19% of the people in the survey said lower crop and livestock prices was a top concern. This month, it was 29%. So you can kind of see that year-to-year change. High input cost, not much change compared to a year ago. People worried about it a year ago, they're still worried about it.
And Langemeyer echoes.
It's been pretty flat. About a third of the people are very concerned about high input costs.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
Basically, we're seeing good crop condition ratings, and that especially as you use this kind of numbers-oriented, quantified view of things that AI trading, more increased AI trading has brought.
AI trading? Dan O'Brien is a grain economist at Kansas State.
Hey, you know, it says if it gets a signal that we've got good crop ratings and we've come through a certain time frame, then boom, we go right to that. We go right to that market outcome with high yields, and we aren't as likely to retain any yield risk yet. And I think it sure seems, anecdotally anyway, just observations in 1 year, that sure seems to be what's happening here. We just don't have any signals that there are those type of crop production problems.
What about the wheat market?
Right now in Kansas, we are through with our wheat harvest. And if anybody still has wheat, it's a storage situation. And we had pretty good numbers, so there's a quantity out there. Exports that have been up and down here. We had 2 weeks ago great exports, just so moderate, if not bearish. Just this last one, basically around 10 million bushels. Need about 16 to meet the USDA's projection per week, and that's for the U.S. overall. Hard red. We'll see if the pace keeps up for hard red. We've had one or two good weeks. Of course, low prices helped encourage that too. So anyway, when you look at all these markets and see what the lows that they're putting in, and look at the measures of market momentum, that like a relative strength index, which at 50% is neutral, 75% bullish, 25% bearish. All these futures basically are hanging around, had gotten up to about 35%, dropped off to about, they're at about 20-25% now. And it's a universal issue. So we're kind of bouncing along that bearish bottom of the measures of momentum in the markets, and aren't really seeing any news to change things. I think going forward that, we are not flying blind. We just don't have any numbers to actually measure yields yet out in the field. Of course, it's somewhat early, so it's really going to bring about a big premium for the August report, the August USDA report, and that'll be farmers giving an opinion on what they have in the field. So we'll be watching that. But we'll really watch the September, October, November reports. That's when the USDA, along with farmer opinions, will be considered. And at those, then we'll. By the time we get through September and especially October, we'll really have a better idea if we're really going to attain these tremendous yields that from a modeling point of view we're seeing, or if there are other factors at play.
Dan, with these low markets, what are we seeing for the cash price?
Well, we still see strong corn basis in the western part of the state. 65 over in Garden City and 35 over in Colby and still 20 over for new crop bids in Garden. You do see decent prices also in Hutchinson area, a little bit weaker, around $4 or below in other areas. Still positive basis overall, weakness in south and south central. And overall, not a lot of change in the other areas. Still the strength of soybean basis bids in the Hutchinson area stands out, as well as this week also in Topeka. Wheat bids still struggling, 10 over at 559 is the highest bid right now, and that's in again, that Hutchinson South Central area. We are seeing now strong bids, but we are seeing new crop bids for next year in all these locations. A lot of them, that the highest is 551 in Hutchinson, 550 in Topeka, 546 in Salina, and less than that elsewhere. So we've turned over and are looking to next year in wheat, I guess.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
So when Nebraskans inherit land or other property, they have to pay the inheritance tax to the county where that property is located.
Anastasia Mayer is an ag economist with the Center for Ag Profitability.
So the value of those assets need to be equal to what is on the inheritance tax return. So you shouldn't have a stepped up basis of $7,000 an acre, the fair market value, and then put on the inheritance tax return that is only valued at $5,000 an acre. Those numbers need to be matching. I have been told by Tina Barrett, from Nebraska Farm Business that, you know, it all kind of depends on how the IRS is feeling. But if you cannot prove the basis, the IRS has the right to say it was zero. Now, for land, we can go through census and survey data. If you absolutely cannot find that piece of ground or those inheritance papers that was filed with your counties, let's say you inherited it back in the 1970s, and now you're wanting to sell, you don't have anybody to transition it to, we can go through and help you kind of figure out what that value may be based off of census and survey values.
And whatever you do, do a little bit of work on your own.
The first thing I always like to tell people to prepare is get an idea of what you want to do with your estate. Kind of either have those bulleted out or a list of what your goals are for your estate plan, transition plan. You need to have those done preferably before you go to your team with these ideas, so that your tax accountant, your lawyer, isn't just sitting across from you and, you know, racking up the extra dollars when you could have done that at home. So I encourage you guys to think about this well in advance. If you are the younger generation and maybe you're thinking that the older generation should start thinking about this, just remember, you can't push a rope. You can't force this. This needs to have them be a part of it. This needs to be kind of their idea, because you can't push a rope. You can't force this on anybody else. And then you need to utilize a whole estate planning team. So include an attorney, your accountant. Try to minimize those tax consequences or that you can have. Talk to your financial advisor or insurance advisors if you need to when developing that estate strategy. And I always like to say that you can shop around. If you go to an attorney, an accountant, financial advisor, whoever is involved in your estate planning team, and you feel like it's just not the right fit, it's okay to go to someone else. And it's okay to change these plans. I really suggest that families look at their estate plan, especially after big life occurrences. So if you had a marriage, a divorce, a new grandkid, a new kid, whatever the circumstances may be in life, it's okay to come back and readjust these estate plans. It's a lot harder to get that estate plan done the first time, and then it's easily changed from one circumstance to another if you decide to change it. But just a thought process of sitting down, thinking what you all own, what you need to think about in an estate plan, how to do that, what your goals are, is probably the hardest part. And then once you get to the process of going to that team, the hard part's done. let them do their work, and then you can readjust it later if you need to.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
I just think it's crucial to our industry. You know, we just seems like a lot of the younger people have just gotten away from volunteering for things like this and stuff. But just having our say and getting to meet these other people from different parts of the world and just being a part of this promotion and getting to hear about a lot of the new stuff that's going on, it's very rewarding.
President of Plains Cotton Growers and board member on Cotton Incorporated, West Texas cotton producer Travis Myers.
And so I would encourage everyone to get involved some way, and they're welcome to call us at PCG, and we'll plug you in. We've got empty spots right now, you know, that people need to fill, and we'd love to put you in a spot if you have any desire to do something like this, and it's very beneficial.